crude people, in a very short time they will be shunted to the fringe of society, and they will be mocked and humiliated for the rest of their lives. They'll provide a livelihood for the people who run the jails and the criminal courts. Not because they're inherently inferior, as Charles Darwin would have argued, but because we've trained them to be that way. I guarantee you that I had for the first 10 years of my teaching exclusively that kind of kid. And in a very short, I'm not a magician, but I understood that if they had something real to do, I hypothesized this behavior would go away, and it always did. I had a standing offer, although I didn't tell the school principal that, a standing offer that if you wanted to set up a little business or you wanted to research setting up a little business, that I'd cover for you as long as your mother agreed and you would submit to my questioning when you came back every couple of days. I mean, it just worked like magic. The unacceptable part of a teenager behavior just vanished because they were doing something that was earning money, or they could see the connection with their own particular interests. They could see that they would be making themselves eligible for opportunities that were going to open up. I didn't have to preach. They already were sold that some things are worth doing. And if you
John, I can say that anybody at any age can be resurrected intellectually through education, the right kind of education. That doesn't mean by learning by rote. I wasn't that great a student until I found something I loved, a passion.
Yes.
And once I was passionate about something, I discovered how wonderful it felt to accomplish things in my passionate field of pursuit. And that passion transferred itself into many other things that I discovered I had interest in.
Darryl, everybody, I mean, there may be people who have some physiological deficiency, but everyone I ever met is that way, although sometimes it's buried so deeply because what you're passionately interested in is discounted by everything. Participates simultaneously in math, science, sociology, psychology, all of the academic subject areas that are taught sort of in absentia from their reality in the world, can be reconnected on anything at all, so that if we were flexible enough to customize, I know how hard that sounds to the teachers listening, it's very easy to do. If you customize based on who this particular kid is, where their interests actually go. Mothers have told me my son's not interested in anything, and I always say the same thing to them. If you were to look over his free time in the summer and say, where is he devoting most of his attention to? And she'll say, computer games. I just pulled that out of a hat. And I'd say, well, here's a massive industry, very, very well paid on the designer level and, you know, various other aspects of it. And each one of those games has a logic that the player's supposed to discover. Otherwise, they don't play the games very well. I said, you can get your kid into the intellectual aspects of this. You can get them examining the infrastructure that produces these games, publicizes these games, distributes them, and banks the profit and goes back for a new generation. It's true of anything you can name, you can build an academic curriculum around. And not a Mickey Mouse academic curriculum, but an intense...
Yeah, but, John, you know, I'm going to go back in a little bit in history here, back to the 1970s. after we got after this, you know, the period in America and Vietnam and the rest, and the single earner family, when my stepfather was bringing home the paycheck for the home, his single paycheck seemed to support the household. And of course, in the 1970s and toward the end of the 70s, it no longer worked. What we needed is a wife and a husband working. And today, every family has two people in the job, and they come home bone tired, and they're almost not communicating with the children around them, and family values are out the window, and these rules. And what I'm saying is, there's another part of this design that I want to bring up here, the social design that has separated parents from their children, so that we no longer are in touch with each other. And generationally as well, with these warehousing of our elderly instead of bringing them into our home for their last years, what we've done here is we've compartmentalized our entire family structure so bad, so profoundly, that now we're not even in touch with what each other needs or what each other wants, spiritually, socially, emotionally, in any way.
Doesn't that make you easier to manage? Remember, the principle is Caesar's divide and conquer. If
yes.
you can separate people from their other sources of wisdom and association, you know, parents from their own parents from their own children, etc., etc., the broken fragments are much more manageable. This was a big philosophical discovery of centuries past, and then
yep.
to turn it into social infrastructure became the work of the new institution of forced schooling. You know, fortunately, in some places on Earth, like Prussia, they were naked open about what they were doing. You know, we learned pretty early on to sugarcoat it with Fourth of July speeches. Oh, I'm sorry, that an allusion may not be clear in South Africa, too. We sugarcoat it with homilies.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Oh, boy. Yeah, but the principle of divide and conquer is at work in every aspect of our society. Now, let me seem to take the enemy point of view. From the new industrial economy, mass production economy, from the point of view of the managers of that, the old-fashioned independent livelihood, you know, small farmer, learn how to do everything, hang tight with your family, it wasn't going to work. You had to have people who could be used up and discarded, and who would change with the changing machinery and subordinate themselves to the machinery. And on the other side, this is even more important, Darryl, on the other side of the equation, the machines only pay for themselves if they can run around the clock. And that means people have to have a continuous appetite for consumption. No other period in human history was that way. I mean, we have the fairy tale, the fable of King Midas about people who want too much gold. But now, with the new industrial economy, you can't afford to allow people to be parsimonious, to be careful, economical about their spending. They have to spend everything they earn, and they also have to spend some fraction of what they're going to earn. So that's why credit is made easy, not for the benefit of the person, you know, who wants to spend more than they earn, but for the benefit of the banks who charge interest, and the credit cards that charge interest. It really is an adversarial system, and the reason you need to keep Darwin in mind is that it's justified by this scientific belief that most human beings are permanently inferior. It's also justified by this religious theory that God picked a few people for salvation and all the rest are garbage. It's justified by this psychological theory that most people are crazy. And so you have to lie to them the way you would to a crazy person.
John, we've actually laid this, we haven't gone into every fact here. And, you know, I like to keep I jump around a lot, but I think it has some sort of symmetry when you finally put it all into thought.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to get to in this last 20 minutes or so of our work together is to start discussing solutions. Now, bearing in mind the state of the family in South Africa and America and France and Germany is in dire need of repair. And now you of course in your teaching in New York City, you saw children who came from very difficult environments, drug families or single parent families. You can make a difference at some level in anyone's life, but what are some of the things that we can do and some of the parents can do who are listening tonight, and even some of the young people who are listening, to begin to take back the process of learning and begin to flourish and prosper within the confines of what we have in our society today?
Sure. Well, my first piece of advice is don't panic. It's taken these people a huge amount of time to set this institution up, and they've made it such an important part of the economy. I mean, it's the leading employer in the United States. It's the leading contract partner in the United States, you know, so supplying the chalk and the ugly desks and the blackboards and the books to school and the bologna and the liverwurst. So don't think you're going to unthread the institution all at once. I mean, keep it in mind that it has to be unthreaded, but not to save you and your neighbors, your kids. You don't have to do it all at once. Now, where I would start, although, watch your kids. I mean this quite sincerely. They'll almost tell you where to start. But abstractly speaking, you've got to start with reading, because it's the access to all kinds of other ways to do things. Don't trust people who tell you, why bother to read Julius Caesar? I'll tell you what he says. No. Read Julius Caesar, and you'll be quite surprised about what's left off. And don't be frightened by the classics. They're almost invariably, they're classically written, at least the ones written in English. In translation, of course, you're at the mercy of the translator.
I don't recommend Balzac's Les Filles du Dor for anybody.
Well, let's take fiction, okay. Because I really tend to live in a world of nonfiction, but I don't have contempt for fiction. Think of it this way, that someone who's written a classic work of fiction that survives for centuries is in fact a person who spent years studying a particular aspect of human psychology much more closely than I would. Not because he's more intelligent than I am, but because he decided to watch in the most minute particulars. Let's say the excess and the misuse of power in Melville's Moby Dick. It's an American classic. Okay, now, if you go to the work of fiction, and you can go harmlessly to partly to kill time, but if you're also looking at the presumed accuracy of the judgments of human behavior, and if it passes the first few tests, you can surrender yourself, and you'll come away from that book not only with a deeper understanding of human possibility, but very often an itch to reread the book a few years later when you've changed and become more deep. But reading is, with almost everyone, it's a key. Now you say, yeah, but my kids don't read. I would say, do you read? I don't think it's possible to have a home that has books and magazines and newspapers that at the dinner table talks about ideas, and not to have reading children. Almost always they imitate what they see around them. If reading isn't important, then it won't be important to the kid.
Yeah.
My mother taught me, my mother didn't have a college degree, but she taught me to read fluently by the time I was 5 years old. She never gave a single lesson. She simply read to me every single day, 7 days a week, from the time I was two, maybe before that, for all I know. And she read grown-up stuff. You know, maybe not the Federalist Papers, but she read stuff that involved ideas and intelligence. When I got to first grade, imagine, I mean, we're living in a working class home in an industrial suburb of Pittsburgh, and here's this woman without a high school education. I go to school. We read right before I left for my first day in first grade. We read an epic about ancient Persia written by Matthew Arnold, the 19th century British poet. So I got to school. I said, boy, if this is what we're reading at home, I really enjoyed it. What are we going to be reading in first grade? Well, we started to read about talking choo-choos.
Yeah, and Tom Dickens and Dick Jane and Sally with Spot.
Yeah. We're reading about talking choo-choos all the way through high school. You know, maybe not as intensely, but so anyway, reading's first. And second, and perhaps more important eventually than reading, is you've got to include your son or your daughter at every age in the business of maintaining your family. I mean that quite sincerely. I know people are reluctant to let their children know how much they earn or what the circumstances of their work is. That's tantamount to erasing part of their brain. If they know they've got to operate on a budget, and there's two ways to do that. There, one way is to yell and say you're not getting more than your whatever your allowance is a week. Another way is to have them see that week after week, month after month, it's like tidal movements. If you don't exercise prudence most of the time, you run into problems that you can't solve and that cause grief and sometimes break up families.
Yeah.
I would say if you have a girl, now I'm saying this probably because of my male gender, but I would say the secrets of male behavior, which have been cherished, and female behavior too, through human history and passed along to the most sophisticated people, certainly belong in your kids' heads too. And if I had a son and a daughter, I'd not only show the daughter how easy it is to enchant the male gender, but I'd show the male gender that if you can't remain enchantment free, that you're very, very likely to end up in a liaison that you regret.
Well, I mean, you know, one of the things that's happening today is now this is the next thing I want to bring up, and we can talk about this. I don't watch very much television, if any. And it's not because I can't watch it. I just don't find it as entertaining as I once did. Now, I used to. As soon as I got through with the grip it had over me, and it did have a grip on me, and it does over many people, I found out that all of a sudden a whole new world of activities opened up
sure.
to me.
Absolutely.
And that, see, if your kids are coming home, no matter where you are in the world, and they flip the TV on and they, you know, they're watching some mindless nonsense that just keeps them staring at the set, this is going to be a perfect environment for them to lose interest in other activities, especially communicating, and reading goes out the window. Family values begin to become eroded by watching the tripe and awful garbage they throw on that television screen. And in quite short order, the family is degraded. Now, of course, you find spiritual degrading, you find emotional degrading, you find moral decay from that box. And I say people should not watch it at all.
Well, look, you're talking to the right guy. My wife and I don't have a television, but as a school teacher, I would have kids watch television not to be amused or entertained and not even for the plot or what the news said was important things in the world, but to understand how their minds are subtly manipulated. For one of the things I remember was very, very successful was on the popular series of the day, whatever they were, I said, there's a formula in these shows, and there's a very, very lucrative occupation of writing for these shows, but you don't have a chance of doing that until you figure out what the formula is. And I would set 13-year-old kids to watching show X or show Y, and they would, in a very, very short time, figure out the formula, and then they would ask me, is every show that way? I would say, every single show. What seems to be different is like a superficial covering over the formula. I tell you, Daryl, that cured so many kids, not completely of TV watching, but certainly of watching it, that allowed them to watch it with a critical eye. And I said, look at the news shows. One of the most popular things in New York are the television reporters who seem to warn you about bad products and
yep.
bad services, consumer analysis. I said, look at the ads for a week on a TV news show, and if you write down who the sponsors are, you will never find them attacked by one of these so-called detectives in the public interest. Never. I said, the television wouldn't exist without the advertising. So the same thing's true of newspapers. And we did this as a classroom exercise with scissors and paste. We would cut out all the ads in the newspaper. I'd buy a couple of copies, mount them, and then classify them into which particular product or service they were selling. I said, you will never find, and then would rank them on a graph. I said, you will never find the highest items on this graph under close scrutiny by a newspaper, a television show, you know, probably not even by a minister in the pulpit, given the, you know.
Well, you know, John, one of the things, like even for programming like the BBC or public PBS or South African public television or French, you know, TF, French television, which is public supported, the information coming across the screen is no longer valid. It's no longer I don't trust it at all.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. Over the last 3 years, we have had decreases in temperature globally. In fact, most recent year, the Arctic ice sheet has begun to grow, and the Antarctic ice sheet has grown by 30% in a decade. And yet, on our public television channels, they keep telling us that we have global warming. And this is public TV now. We're sponsoring our own lies here. And the fact is that when we watch things like this, it has a the appearance of truth, and yet it's full of nonsense. And what I'm trying to say here is people need to become, young people especially, need to not trust things on their face and be interested enough and inquisitive enough to begin their own investigation of things that people tell them.
Of course, that's quite true. But I think what you also have to do in a school setting or in a learning situation is you have to specifically point out the mechanism that's at work. For example, what you said about global warming, I happen to know from the inside, it works this way. Once the government is committed to a certain point of view, the way it keeps public television in line is because the government has access to a whole lot of pieces of news that public television wants to have access to, and they're simply notified in the most polite terms that it won't be convenient for their reporters to attend this conference, or on the other hand, that they'll be most welcome and they can sit right next to the throne of power. By opening and closing the tap of information, you can even bend the principles of highly principled people who realize that maybe if they concede this point, they can make it up to the, on the shrine of truth another way. Kids can instantly, I mean, they're enthusiastic about learning these things, especially if you discourage them from being cynical, because cynics get wrapped up, you know, in a tight world, and then if the world changes, they're unable to change with it. In the United States, we have a piece of information that's taught to every single kid who passes through public or private school. It's called the separation of powers into the executive power of the president, the legislative power, which is divided into two houses of Congress, one for the wealthy and one for the ordinary, and finally the Supreme Court. So that from an engineer's point of view, to have to please all four of these bases in order to get legislation passed is a nightmare. Why would anyone set up such a system that makes it hard to get anything done? Well, the answer is written in a book called The Federalist Papers that came out when the country came out, but no one reads anymore. When I was in junior high school, you had to read it, and in there it says that on the basis of the study of human history, there's never been a government that didn't become corrupt, and they become corrupt quicker if they have absolute power. And
no,
so,
we've lost that today, you know, with executive orders and the judiciary being bought and paid for by private interest and by tax. Yeah. So exactly what has happened to the United States is happening worldwide, and what we're doing is we're turning over our legislative process to big business, and which is run by all the usual suspects that I've discussed on this broadcast with others. And so my point is, John, is that we are at the time we need critical thinking the most is the time we have the least. And we are really in a race against time here to affect the change that's necessary to save ourselves, because we're heading down tyranny's the dark path, in my view, and I'm wondering in this last few minutes if you second that belief, and how it is in this dark, dark hour we can pull ourselves out of it.
Well, some people are, of course, this is an unusual moment in modern history. What has happened is that the global experts have lost their handle on what's going on. Now, they will preserve themselves, there's no doubt of that, but they simply have lost the logic of management. They can't, what they predicted would happen has not happened. And as a consequence, our economy here in the United States is imploding fast, and why anyone on earth would accept our currency, I don't know, because it comes fresh from the printing press as much as you want. You know, it's paper. But I watch in the learning arena, let me call it that, and I see that the internet has changed the face of science and every other academic area. The connections which at one time were hard to achieve, it was a slow process, that you can, in fact, using the internet, you can make these connections, even with global experts, with a fair amount of ease. You can put together teams of like-minded people with extreme ease. Schools partly were set up to disconnect. That's the divide and conquer principle. The internet reconnects us, and it gives us information. This is quite true. It's virtually unobtainable, even to insiders. Let me give you an example of that. A magnificent book in the last 6 months was published in the States. It's the entire history of the tobacco industry. And it goes into minute detail about private memos of how to load the cigarettes with nicotine, etc., and how to use funny animals, you know, to hook kids. And the guy says in the foreword to the book, I mean, I just smiled from ear to ear when I read it. He said he was denied access to every single document library in the cigarette world. And he had pretty much resigned himself to doing a cut-and-paste job of newspaper articles about cigarettes, when suddenly someone said to him, there's 40 million pages of tobacco industry documents that were brought to light in lawsuits and are now up on the internet, and they're the property of everyone. 40 million pages. I tell you, you'd probably be a copy or two of this book floating around South Africa just to read the memos that these cynical, I can't use obscene language, but, you know, these bastards were circulating with one another, is to open your eyes to the way the world's really organized. So what I've done in Weapons of Mass Instruction, which is my latest book, is not only to identify specifically the instruments of harm school uses, because you can simply avoid them. It isn't very hard. Or you can study them as a critic would study them, so that you know your enemy. But also, what I've laid out are the paths to enlightenment that the elite, among the elite, have reserved for themselves and their children. And those two, as we talked about earlier, Daryl, they're easy to access. You have to know they exist. And the exercises to develop proficiency in them are almost axiomatic. I mean, you don't need somebody to hold your hand very long. I used to tell kids, if you write a 300-word paper every single day, 7 days a week, by the time you've done that for a couple of years, doing it at 500 words will seem trivial to you. And then to make the leap to 1,000 words, you know, three or four typewritten pages, which is basically what life, even at its pinnacle, asks of us, to be able to sustain a case for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, I said it'll just come just by doing it, just like by riding a two-wheeled bicycle. No matter how many scrapes you've suffered in the first couple of days, you will eventually be sort of like Lance Armstrong.
Well, you know, I agree with those things, John, and I want to tell you, this was an important program for the family people out there who have children in the education system around the world, because we're listened to throughout the world. We're heard in 154 countries, John. So,
oh my.
This information, I'm a bit of a global force over here, and I want you to know that you know, I watched my children's education. You know, they were A and B students, and when I talked to them about issues, intellectual issues, they had virtually no background in almost any of them, because my children were raised outside, away from me, and with my ex-wife. And sadly, they were great students according to the system, and they didn't get the same education I did. I've been able to turn that around in some ways with my kids by being on them about reading and things of that nature. But the fact is, all of us, it's never too late. I want everyone to know that, regardless if your son is or daughter is 14 or 13 or even 17 or 18, or even if you're an adult. The time for learning is all the time, John, and you know that. And the time for turning these things around is now. And I think that
you will... listeners, once you get an appetite for ideas, whatever your background was, and mine was a coal mining, steelworking town, once you get an appetite for ideas, every single day is like a treasure hunt. Your mind is constantly generating this inner life. It's very, very exciting. You almost don't have time to watch television or go to the movie. I mean, you do, but you know what I mean. You're able to please yourself and grow without money at any time. Could I give the website one more time?
Please do that before we go here. We got a minute left. Go ahead, John.
Okay. It's www.johntaylorgatto.com, and Taylor's T-A-Y-L-O-R, and Gatto is G-A-T-T-O. What you'll find up there is not only a way to buy, if you choose, my new book, Weapons of Mass Destruction, but you'll find my last book, Underground History of Education, up there, complete everywhere, and it won't cost you a penny, or you can send $35 and buy it, but I myself would just read it on the website or download the parts that are of interest to you. This has been a real pleasure.
It has been, John, and I want to thank you and be well. I will be in touch with you soon, sir, for a quick catch up on our latest events. I thank you for being on the radio with me tonight.
Well, maybe if the sponsor brings me to South Africa, we can have lunch together.
Actually, I live in France. You know that.
Oh, I forgot. Yes, yes. Well, somebody invite me to France to speak, please. In England,
thanks,
Spain.
Thanks, John, for being on. Ladies and gentlemen, John Gatto, I want to thank all of you out there in the listening audience for being part of this program this evening. Of course, next week we'll have another provocative guest, and I want to thank CII for sponsoring this program and all our sponsors as well. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please, take care of your families and be well. Bye-bye now.